I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest, Kathy Groover, is an award-winning author and host of the national TV show based on her first book, The Alternative Medicine Cabinet, winner of Beverly Hills Books Award. She earned her PhD in natural health and has authored two books on stress, Body-Mind Therapies for the Body Worker, and just published Conquer Your Stress with Mind-Body Techniques, winner of the Indie Excellence Award, the Beverly Hills Books Award, and finalist for the USA Best Books Award. She has studied mind-body medicine at the famed Benson Henry Institute for Mind-Body Medicine at Harvard Medical School and pursued further education at the National Institute of Health. Groover has been featured as an expert in numerous publications, including Glamour, Time, Wall Street Journal, CNN, WebMD, Prevention, Men's Health, Huffington Post, Yahoo.com, Ladies Home Journal, Massage and Body Works Magazine, and Massage Magazine. She has written dozens of health and wellness articles and contributing posts. Dr. Groover has appeared as a guest expert on over 200 radio and TV shows, including NPR, Sky News London, CBS Radio, and Lifetime Television, and has done over 100 educational lectures around the country. For fun and stress relief, she does flying trapeze and hip-hop dance. A recent winner of NABO's Spirit of Entrepreneurship Awards and nominee for the Gutsy Gal Awards, Kathy maintains a massage and natural health practice in Santa Barbara, California, also offering phone and email health consultations. She has also produced an instructional massage DVD, Therapeutic Massage at Home, Learn to Rub People the Right Way, and is a practitioner with over 20 years of experience. Her award-winning book, The Alternative Medicine Cabinet, was recently turned into a national talk show. More information can be found at www.thealternativemedicinecabinet.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Kathy, and I look forward to hearing about stress and stress reduction techniques. Now first, what is stress and how is it affecting our health?
Well, that's a great question, Carl, and I think we have to start with that because, you know, we've all felt stress, we see the effects of stress around us, but very few of us think about what stress actually is. Mm-hmm. And the textbook definition of stress is the perception that things are going to be bigger than we can handle, basically. So mm-hmm. the feeling that things are going to get more than what we are able to manage. The other definition is a threat, real or imagined. And the two parts of those definitions I like is the perception that we're not going to be able to handle it and imagined mm-hmm. as a threat. Mm-hmm. You know, old stress was easy. We'd be walking through the jungle, some big creature would jump out and try to make us dinner, and we would have that very primal fight or flight response. Mm-hmm. Once the danger passed, all the hormones and everything would return to normal and we'd sleep. Well, the problem with our stress nowadays is it's not a bear jumping out at us. It's the traffic, and it's the bacon, and it's the IRS, and it's the boss, and it's the mother-in-law's nuts, and it's, the, you know, fill in the blank. So we're inundated with stress that we can't control. We try to control it. We can't. So the best we can do is control our reaction to that stress, and mm-hmm. that's what I want to tell you how to do today.
Mm-hmm. Great. Then how can we handle stress in our lives?
I think the first step, you know, in a lot of 12-step programs, the first rule is admitting you have a problem. I think when it comes to stress management, the first thing that we have to do is realize we can't control the stress. Mm-hmm. As I said, you know, we can't control what the government's doing, we can't control the traffic, or that our flight is delayed for the 400th time, or, you know, whatever the issue is. So taking control of what we can, managing what is within our power, which is our reaction. We can do that so many ways. We can do that by watching what we're saying and thinking, mm-hmm. because oftentimes we're creating stress with those words, with those thoughts, with that dwelling in the past and that projecting into the future, we have the ability to stop thinking those things, or at least change those thoughts. It's not always easy to stop thinking things. And, you know, doing things like meditation or visualization, mindfulness practices, going and getting your massage, doing your yoga, exercise, you know, finding what works for you as a stress reduction technique is going to be the key to handling that.
Mm-hmm.
And remembering that it's the outside stuff that we can manage to our best, you know, to the greatest extent we can, but ultimately what's in our control is our reaction. And there's so many ways of dealing with that. You just have to learn them and practice them. They're ultimately really simple.
Then, Kathy, many people have negative repetitious thoughts. How can we deal with these?
Yeah, and that is what I see as being one of the largest contributors to stress. You know, we'll have these repetitive thoughts over and over again, and these are ingrained into us typically since childhood. You know, maybe we've heard, you know, your nose is too big, you're too skinny, you're too fat, you're too old, you're worthless, you're bad at math, you can't read a map. You know, I mean, whatever the silly things are, you know, these were ingrained in us since childhood. And just like if you say things enough times to an animal, they're going to learn that and they're going to have that same reaction over and over again. It's Pavlov, you know, straight out of the textbook. So when we have those repetitive thoughts in our brain, it's going to give us the same reaction that we've always had. So changing those thoughts is so important. And, you know, I've had people say to me, well, I can't just stop thinking things. Well, no, it's really hard to do that. So if I tell everybody listening, you know, don't think of an elephant, we always thought of the elephant. We're already in that pattern. So rather than trying to not think of an elephant, let's all think of a camel. Let's replace that thought. So, and this is where I like affirmations, and this is one of my most favorite stress reduction techniques. I know you and I have talked about these on past shows about how, you know, how powerful our words are. So rather than saying something like, oh, I think I'm getting sick, oh, I hope I'm not getting sick, oh, no, I'm getting sick, rather than reinforcing that in your body, say something like, I am healthy and well. My immune system is strong and resilient. Because what we can do with that powerful language is, at the very least, we're stopping that other thought. We can't think two things at once. But at the greatest is we are actually programming our immune system. And we have the ability to do that. And it's so funny because I put affirmations up every day on my Facebook page. And I have my friends commenting in and things like that. And oftentimes they will not negate what I'm saying, but they'll say something like, oh, that's easy for you to say, or I hope my day turns out that way. And I have had to write to so many of them and say, but if you repeat this enough, your day is going to turn out that way. I think that the example I was thinking of was, I have plenty of time. Well, somebody wrote back to me and said, oh, well, I'm so busy today and I don't have plenty of time. I said, yeah, but if you go about your day and your tasks saying, I don't have enough time, I'm never going to get this done, what are you setting yourself up for? You know, if you program yourself by relaxing, getting rid of that stress response and saying, I have plenty of time, at the very least, you're, you know, changing those negative thoughts and you're not going to go about your day in a stressed way. So I see benefit, huge benefit in the language that we choose and, and not negating ourselves. So that's my big tip right there is, affirmations.
My good friend Anne Marie Evers, do you know that name?
Dr.
Anne Marie Evers? She has written the books on affirmation. Right. Well, she's done a lot more than Louise Hay, I think, probably started affirmations. But Anne Marie Evers has done a lot. And she told me recently, she said one of her patients told her, and she thinks this is wonderful, and I do too, I am 1% healthier today than I was yesterday. Or you could say, I am 10% healthier today than I was yesterday. You know, I think that's great if you just keep repeating that.
Absolutely. And, you know, write them down. Put them on your dashboard of your car. Put them on the window where you put your, you know, the mirror where you put your makeup on. Having those positive reminders because, you know, we're constantly inundated with negativity. You know, you turn on the news and it is all negative. It's all horrible things are happening and there's disasters and there's war and there's stabbings. And, you know, we have to find a way to counterbalance that with the positivity in our lives. And, again, since we can't control what's happening outside, let's control our own thoughts and do the best we can to make those positive and fulfilling and encouraging to ourselves.
Right.
We get enough resistance from outside.
Mm-hmm. Then we hear a lot about meditation, but are there people who can't meditate, and what do they do?
Yeah, I'm one of those people. I am not a meditator. And it's so funny because, you know, everybody hears that I'm in natural health and alternative medicine, and they assume I sit around all day meditating and doing yoga, and I'm a vegetarian and I don't drink. And I'm like, oh, no. I am a wine-drinking carnivore, and I do hip-hop to relax. I am not yoga just doesn't work for me. You know, we have to customize our activity. I do flying trapeze for fun. So you know yoga is going to bore me to tears. But meditation is really, it's hard. It's hard to still your body and quiet your mind, especially for someone like me who's very go. Mm-hmm. I'm very type A. You know, I'm from the East Coast originally. I talk fast, I walk fast, I eat fast. So tell me to sit on a pillow and shut off my mind, and it was a ball of trouble for me. And I had the privilege of studying at Harvard with the Benson Henry Institute for mm-hmm. Mind-Body mm-hmm. Medicine. Mm-hmm. Herbert Benson is just, you know, I mean, he's a pioneer in the field of mind-body, and the work that he's done, the scientific studies that he's done on things like meditation and affirmations and acupuncture, and I mean, just beautiful work. And they taught us a mini meditation. And I got very excited when I heard the word mini, because I thought, oh, good, maybe I can handle that. And it's really simple. There's two steps. Concentrate on something repetitive. Mm-hmm. And the second step is, when thoughts break through, dismiss them without judgment. Mm-hmm. And that really confused me at first, Carl, because I thought, well, but I thought mm-hmm. you had to sit a certain mm-hmm. way, and you cross your legs, and you put your fingers in a certain position, and your tongue went on the roof of your mouth, and you rolled your eyes back, and if you itched, you couldn't scratch, and then you turned to millions of bubbles and floated away. You know, that's what I thought meditation was supposed mm-hmm. to be. And when they said two rules, I thought, I can do this. So the way they taught us was to simply concentrate on the breath, mm-hmm. and so observe that rise and fall of the chest. And you're not trying to change it or slow it down or anything. You're just watching it. That's going to be your focal point to draw you back into that present moment. And then on the inhales, we would think, I am. And on the exhales, think, at peace. Mm-hmm. It was so simple. Inhale, I am. Exhale, at peace. And if other thoughts would float through, like for me personally, they inevitably would. Maybe it's the shopping list, the to-do list, the, oh, I got to call so-and-so. Say, I'm thinking. Return to the breath, and I am at peace. And to me, it became one of the most powerful tools because it's shutting out those other thoughts. It's giving you a moment of quiet. It is a meditation, and you can do these anywhere. You know, you don't mm-hmm. have to put yourself on the pillow in a quiet room on a Tuesday at noon because that's your routine. You can do this in line at the bank, in the car. Don't close your eyes if you're driving. Waiting for that delayed flight, about to go in for a job interview or a big exam. Because when we're in a stress response, that fight or flight, you know, it has really specific reactions in our body. It stops a lot of our cognitive function. Mm-hmm. Because if we're running from a bear, we don't need to be doing complicated math. We don't need to be eloquent in our speaking. We don't need to be digesting food the way we would in a calm environment. We don't need to have a sexual response or reproductive issues happening. Our muscles fill with blood because we're going to fight or flee. Our heart races, we take deeper breaths because we're trying to get more air. All of these things over long term are going to be detrimental to our health. It depletes our immune system mm-hmm. Over time, the stress response. So when we can take that little vacation from stress with I am at peace, it's a huge thing. And I've taught this to thousands of people, drug addicts and young children and teenagers and alcoholics and people with cancer and anybody that needs to be in that present moment for a second and allow the external stress to just float away. I am at peace is one of the most powerful things you can do. So if you take nothing away from this, that to mm-hmm. me is that's the key. It's changed my life. And now I can actually sit on a pillow and meditate. It's been mm-hmm. my gateway drug, so to speak.
So this actually then will remove stress.
Yeah. Yeah, because you figure if you look at where stress is, it's either behind us in the mm-hmm. past of something we're dwelling on, mm-hmm. or it's projected into the future of something we're worried about that may or may not even happen. And concentrating on your breath immediately pulls you back into the present. Mm-hmm. It's a mindfulness practice. Mm-hmm. And saying, I am at peace, you can't be thinking, oh, geez, I hope this job interview goes okay, and, you know, I really need this job, and I'm broke, and I only have one more week of unemployment, and I hope I get it, and I am at peace. And because, and I see people doing this with dates and stuff too, they work themselves up to the point where they're going to have such a negative experience on the date, you might as well stay home. Going into it, you know, I am at peace. And one of the studies that Dr. Benson did showed that long-term meditators actually have a slowed genetic effect of aging compared to people that walk around stressed. Oh. So everybody's looking for that fountain of youth. They're looking for ways to not have to be on as many medications and not have to have medical procedures. This is one of the things that I think can help. I mean, we certainly want to, you know, take our vitamins and eat well and see our physician for what we need. And but this is a key that I think is missing. And if we can bring that mind-body connection back in, I think we're going to be ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm. Great. Then, Kathy, you mentioned visualization. Can you tell us a little bit about how you can use that for stress relief?
Yes, absolutely. Visualization is one of my favorites. Those are my top three: affirmations, meditation, visualization. I learned to visualize when I was 15. I was very privileged to be around so many phenomenal adults that didn't treat me like a kid. You know, they imparted wisdom into me that I think most, you know, 15-year-olds probably weren't walking away with. But I was in a summer stock production of Oklahoma, and I was starting to get sick. I had that tickle in my throat that said, oh, something's coming. And so I'm sitting in rehearsal, and I've got this giant thing of hot tea, and I've got all this lemon and honey, and I'm coughing, and I'm sneezing, and I'm trying to stave off this illness. And one of the other cast members came up to me and he said, "Wow, are you feeling okay?" And I said, "No, I'm not. I have a sore throat. I'm losing my voice. And we open this week and I've got to sing and I'm so upset and this is my big debut." And he said, "Okay, it's okay." He goes, "Have you ever visualized?" And I looked at him and said, "I'm 15. I have no idea what you're talking about." And he said, "Oh, okay, that's true. Yeah, I forgot. Well, do you daydream?" And I said, "Yes, I daydream all the time. And I'm an only child, so I talk to myself pretty good, too." Mm-hmm. And he goes, "Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect." He said, "So tonight, once you get home, I want you to visualize your immune system." And I'm sure I had this completely blank look on my face, because what in the world does that mean, visualize mm-hmm. my immune system? So he instructed me to picture a place behind my heart, which I now know to be the thymus gland, which is a big part of our immune system, to picture a white light there, and then picture that white light rushing up my chest into my throat and devouring whatever was causing the sore throat, mm-hmm. whatever virus or bug or illness, whatever that was. And he gave me the image of the cavalry rushing over the mm-hmm. hill, you know, at the end of the movie, mm-hmm. coming down in and saving the day. He said, "That's your white blood cells. That's what I want you to picture, are your white blood cells rushing into that area and doing battle with the illness and winning. Can you do that?" And I said, "Well, sure, I guess. I'll try it." So I got home that night, and I visualized the white light behind my heart rushing into my throat, and there was this coolness, and I pictured the cavalry coming over the hill and rushing down and doing battle, and there were mm-hmm. horses and cannons, and it was a crazy fight going on in there. And I woke up the next morning, and I had no sore throat, and I didn't get sick. I was brilliant in Oklahoma, and I've been visualizing since. And I have taught so many people to visualize because, again, the power in this, it's that self-care aspect mm-hmm. that so many of us in this country ignore. You know, we take the drugs, we do the surgery, we take the herbs, we do the stretching, but we're not doing that self-care aspect of mind-body.
Right.
And so customizing that visualization, whether it's the cavalry rushing over the hill or ants coming in, like at a picnic and carrying away pieces of inflammation or pain. I had one gal share with me that she would picture Pac-Man, you know, the little video game going tuk 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 and eating away the pain that she was having,
mm-hmm.
or ice melting or angels swooping in.
Mm-hmm.
I had a cancer patient. She's since passed. She was terminal at the time that I was working with her, and she had such a large tumor in her throat, you could actually see it coming out of the skin. I mean, it was gigantic. There, at this point, it really would have taken her a miracle. I think she passed away within 10 days of us starting this therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But she would picture angels swooping in and carrying the tumor away, and it didn't shrink the tumor, but what it did was it gave her control.
Mm-hmm.
Which so often when we're in a terminal illness situation, we don't have. You know,
right.
We don't feel like
right.
we have control. People are doing things to us.
Mm-hmm.
This gave her control, it gave her peace, and it took her pain away. And she would get out of my office, and I would, I would do Reiki on her, and I'd play this just amazing music, and she would visualize these angels coming in. And she had expressed to me on so many occasions that was the only time of the day she wasn't having pain.
Oh.
Now, it didn't save her life, it didn't cure her, but it helped her with her healing, even though she did pass away. So visualization can be so powerful, and I still use it to this day. I picture a little construction worker running around my body and fixing things. And I have healed a cracked vertebrae. I have healed, I had a really bad foot injury from a trapeze accident, and it healed so much quicker than anybody thought. They told me not to walk for 10 days, and at the end of 10 days, I actually did a dance show. I was so much better. We have this huge power within us, and it's just a matter of tapping into it, practicing it, and accepting that you can use it, that it'll work for you. So, the power of the mind and the body is so incredibly powerful. And whether it's the affirmations or the I am at peace or visualizing or any of those techniques that you can learn about, use them and try them and see what works for you. There's no side effects. It's typically free. If it doesn't work, at the very least, you're relaxed. So, it's part of my daily protocol, and I recommend it for everybody.
Rue McClellan from the Golden Girls used visualization when she had cancer. Now, I don't remember what she visualized. I only remember that she used this.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
Well, and she was a really neat lady. I read a lot of stuff about her.
Right.
She was very cool. She
right,
was my favorite
right.
Golden Girl.
She was. Right.
But yeah, it's so powerful. And, athletes do it. You think they're not standing there visualizing the football going through those uprights when they're about to kick or getting that goal. We do it innately anyway. We just have to remember to make our visualization positive. So rather than seeing ourselves, falling down on the ice, see ourselves doing the trick right. I visualize now when I do trapeze, I visualize in my head as I'm climbing up the ladder what the trick is going to look like and what my body position is going to do. Sometimes I'll walk myself through it out loud with positive self-talk. It's so powerful, and we do it without even thinking. So let's put some consciousness to it and make it work for us.
Right. I interviewed one of the, I can't remember whether he was national hockey or something, and he also did visualization, and he had a business where he taught other athletes to use visualization. I thought that was interesting, too.
Yeah, so many of them do. I did Daniel Brown taught a 2 or 3 day meditation course back at Harvard, and it was a lot. He used a lot of sports metaphors, which I appreciated because I'm a huge football fan, but so many of the other women are like, okay, can he stop with the sports? But that was his main target audience when he, in his private practice, was working with athletes for performance enhancement. And if the athletes can do it, then we can do it. You know, if they can get a goal, we can get a promotion. It takes some work, but we can do it too.
Well, Kathy, then, would you tell us about your book and your products and services and how the listeners can reach you and locate your book?
Yeah, absolutely. My latest book is Conquer Your Stress with Mind-Body Techniques, and it talks about not only the three I just mentioned, which are my three favorites, the meditation, visualization, and affirmations, of course, in a lot more detail, but I mentioned probably about 50 other techniques that you can either do yourself or you can seek out a practitioner for. And I put so many in because I wanted to make it a buffet. I wanted options for everybody. So if you're not a meditator, maybe you want to look into the yoga aspect or the color healing or sound healing or past life regression or hypnosis. I put so much stuff in because not everything works for everybody. So I want to give people options. So that's available on my website, which is thealternativemedicinecabinet.com. And my other book, The Alternative Medicine Cabinet, is there. I also wrote a stress book specifically for other practitioners called Body Mind Therapies for the Body Worker. I have a massage DVD there, links to past interviews and articles, and a lot of really great free resources. You can sign up for my newsletter there. And I had a very exciting occurrence last week. I was featured on a billboard in Times Square, New York. And so I was so excited. So I have a picture of my billboard up on my website too, which I don't normally say tickled, but I was beyond tickled. I was just so excited.
Right.
And again, it's thealternativemedicinecabinet.com. Go check it out. A lot of great resources there, and I hope everyone gets some good information out of it.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Kathy. It's been interesting and will be useful to everyone because everyone, you know, has experiences with stress and need to know how to control it. So I appreciate this.
Thanks for having me on, Carl. I appreciate you.
Mm-hmm. Today, I want to tell you about an upcoming movie on holistic, natural, alternative treatment for cancer that you will not want to miss. As many of you know, I am a 40-year lung cancer survivor who used holistic, natural interventions after being given 6 months to live by traditional medicine and offered chemo and surgery that I refused. As a pioneer in the field of holistic natural treatments for illnesses who use many of the Edgar Cayce treatments in practice, I know from experience with myself and others that this approach works. In the blog for this upcoming movie, the filmmaker says, "This film purports to activate our constitutional right to benefit from the reversal of the cancer epidemic via holistic medicine, innovative science, eco-community, the law, the blog's campaign, and creative chutzpah. By reversing cancer holistically, the survivor significantly increases lifespan potential under healthy conditions while saving bodily parts, reducing cost, helping the country to fix its sick care system, and eradicate today's costly chronic disease epidemic." The filmmaker, Dr. Christian Jobe, is a naturopathic physician and lawyer and is well qualified to produce this film and adds credibility to its selected content. The documentary includes both experts in the field and also survivors who used a holistic approach. Some experts in the film include Sylvia Beljanski, Burton Berkson, Gabriel Cousins, Charlotte Gerson, Nicholas Gonzalez, Richard Gordon, Tom Lodi, Keith Mumby, Stephen Ross, and Bradley Weeks. Some survivors who used a holistic approach are Billy Best, a 20-year survivor of Hodgkin's lymphoma, Lori Christian, a survivor of Paget's breast cancer, Carl O'Helvey, a 40-year survivor of lung cancer, and Suzanne Moss, a 20-year survivor of breast cancer. Following the release of this movie on DVD in the next few weeks, a second one is planned that will interview experts and survivors in Europe. To view a trailer for the upcoming movie, go to http://holisticoncologymovie.com. Also, updates are posted on Facebook at https://www.facebook.com/holisticoncologymovie. Please like the page to stay informed on updates. You can also sign up to buy the film at this time. You will not be disappointed because I believe this is the first film that showed a holistic approach to cancer treatment. My second guest, Dr. Tina Tassina, is a licensed psychotherapist in Southern California with 30 years' experience in counseling individuals and couples and author of 13 books published in 17 languages, including It Ends With You, Growing Up and Out of Dysfunction, The Unofficial Guide to Dating Again, Money, Sex, and Kids, Stop Fighting About the Three Things That Can Ruin Your Marriage, The Commuter Marriage, and her newest love style, How to Celebrate Your Differences. Dr. Tassina is Chief Romance Officer for LoveForever.com, a website designed to strengthen relationships and guide couples through the various stages of their relationship with personalized tips, courses, and online couples counseling. Online, she is known as Dr. Romance. Dr. Tessina appears frequently on radio and such TV shows as Oprah, Larry King Live, and ABC News. She also publishes an email newsletter, Happiness Tips from Tina. More information is available at www.loveforever.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Tessina, and I look forward to hearing about dysfunctional families. Now, why did you write your book?
Well, I write all of my books because my clients need a particular kind of information. And when I get a group of clients that need, I keep saying the same thing over and over, mm-hmm. that's when I decide to write a book. So this one is about people who didn't learn certain tools for life in their growing up years and needed a way to learn them. And so, as I said, when I was worked up mm-hmm. enough exercises mm-hmm. for clients and things with clients that I was repeating myself a lot with different people, that's when I knew we needed a book.
Well, that makes sense. I did the same when I was teaching, and I couldn't find a book that had most of the information in that I wanted to get across to the students. And uh-huh. it meant lots of articles and looking at several books and all, and so that's when I decide, oh, well, I need to write a book. So it makes sense, right? Okay, then what is a dysfunctional family?
A dysfunctional family, as implied by the word, is one that doesn't function. Families have certain functions they're supposed to carry out. One, you know, they're supposed to support all the members in them financially and emotionally and in other ways, and they're supposed to be able to work together and solve problems together and run the household together and do those things. When those functions don't work and the family breaks down into either a lot of fighting or a lot of distance and struggle, then they're called dysfunctional.
Then how old are you when you become a grown-up?
It really doesn't. The kind of grown-up I'm talking about, emotional maturity, really doesn't connect with your chronological age. Mm-hmm. It's about when you can manage your own emotions and feelings and deal with people without being reactive.
Mm-hmm.
Be responsive instead of reactive and think about what you're doing and not just go off on your in your emotional way and not do knee-jerk kinds of reactions.
Mm-hmm.
That's what maturity is.
So not all adults are grown-ups.
Some people actually end their lives not grown-up.
And why do you say it ends with you?
Well, family dysfunction is, I see it as like a big snowball coming down a hill
mm-hmm.
from generations back and gathering energy and momentum and mass as it comes down the hill, you know, picking up more snow. And families, you know, had alcoholism or some kind of tragic event or something, and they get pushed out of shape by that, and they then pass that down to the next generation. And it keeps going, and somebody has to kind of stop and let that snowball crash and stop rolling and heal themselves and sort themselves out and get the healthy information separated from the unhealthy information.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it ends with you. If you decide to change and to do the things that are in the book, the exercises and the information that's in the book, then you can stop that snowball from rolling down. You can stop it from affecting your own children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Good. Then, Dr. Tessina, why are there so many dysfunctional families now?
Well, you know, there's a 12-step group called Adult Children of Alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called ACA. I kind of like to call that Adult Children of Anybody. Families get... In recent years, really, families are getting a little more help, but for so many generations, families got no help at all on
how to be a family, what a family is supposed to be, you know, what good parenting is. So whatever issues were in their family, they had not much help and not many tools to fix it. So now we're getting tools together, and of course that's what the book is. It's just full of tools you can use to fix whatever inheritance you got from your family that doesn't work right. Like, for example, if there were alcoholics in your family, and maybe you're not an alcoholic, but maybe you keep getting involved with them somehow. And you do that because they feel familiar to you. That word familiar comes from family. There are tools to use in the book to learn how to recognize healthy from unhealthy and how to not get involved with the unhealthy and stay on the healthy side.
And what makes a family functional?
What makes a family functional is learning how to work with each other and support each other and deal with each other with respect. Respect is a really big component of being functional. Also, to stay away from drama. Drama automatically means you're in dysfunction. If you have drama going on, there's dysfunction going on. So, you know, sometimes that's inevitable. I mean, it's dramatic if somebody gets seriously ill or something, and that's not anybody's fault, but it does mess with the function of the family. And you have to find a way to deal with whatever's going on, including things like that, with and still remain functional.
Do you still look at families as a system?
Well, I look at them as people on one hand, but on the other hand, there is a system going on. People develop systems. We all need systems. Systems help our help our lives be easier. If we don't have routines and and things that we do without thinking too hard about it, without having to figure out every step. Life is really hard if you have to figure out every step as you go along. So we need the routines, but we need to make sure the routines are functional and the systems are functional. So yes, I do look at families partly as systems and partly as individual people.
Yeah, I think that's a good approach. I always tried to look at the family as a system where one part affects another. So as you say, if someone got sick, then that means either someone in the family has to fill in that role, or you have to look outside to the community to fulfill that whole or part of that role. Like if it was the person that provided the money for the family, then you might have to look for a resource outside, etc. It seemed like a very usable framework for viewing families, or, I mean, for looking at communities as well, depending on...
On my website at tinatacina.com, there are more than 100 articles that are free for people. And there are articles about what is a dysfunctional family and, you know, how families are supposed to work and couples can cooperate for success. And they all talk about systems and how to turn dysfunctional systems into functional systems.
I developed a theory at one point, and I refined it over, I guess, 35 years, an energy theory of nursing and health. And it was based on a systems approach, but everything went back to the concept of energy, which made it pretty easy, you know, for the students to work with. You know, the individuals were energy system, an energy, the family, they exchanged energy with the environment, etc. And then, you know, we'd get into excesses and deprivations of energy, and we'd get into using community. So my last book, which was after 35 years of working with it, was a community book, and it looked at a specific community where the students used a system approach. And that was my most popular of the books that I wrote, I think.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
I think because people had read the theory earlier, but I didn't have enough where I followed it completely through that they could understand exactly what I was talking about. And Of course, there were people in nursing that didn't understand what I was talking about anyhow. You know the feeling, don't you?
Yes, I understand that.
Then, once you've been damaged by childhood problems, are you stuck with that damage?
No, absolutely not. All of that can be worked through. What happens with trauma from childhood or damage or just bad information from childhood is until you work through it and resolve it, it's like it's happening every day.
Mm-hmm.
Feels to the person like it's happening every day. And every time something happens that reminds you a little bit of it or something, your reaction is over the top because you're reacting to what happened when you were little. As you resolve it and take care of it, and what happens is it fades into the background. You know those things happened to you, but they're not important anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They don't affect you anymore. You've overcome them, you've resolved them, you've worked through them, and so now your reactions today are just about what happens today and not about what happened years ago.
Mm-hmm. And how does your book help people to grow up?
Well, it's pretty amazing. One of the things I teach people how to do is how to be an inner detective and how to look at what's going on inside themselves, because a lot of people are very unaware.
Mm-hmm.
We have different parts of the brain or parts of the mind that operate independently from each other until we link them up and get aware of them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a childlike part of the brain, which is the limbic brain in the back, and then there's the what we think of as ourselves, the grown-up, the intellectual decision-making part in the front, in the cerebral cortex, and those two operate independently, so the kid can suddenly emerge and take over and make a mess for you,
mm-hmm.
and you don't even know yourself what happened. But as you learn how to discover what's going on there and how to connect those two parts of the brain up so they're in communication, which we, in therapy, we call that integration,
mm-hmm.
Psychological integration. And once you learn to connect those up, then your front part of your brain, your back part of your brain are working together. The grown-up and the child are working together, and nobody gets out of control, and you always understand when the child is getting upset about something, and you know what to do to deal with that, and they don't have that childhood trauma. You know, the child has been updated, so it understands it's not living in that situation anymore. And the exercises are in the book. They take you step by step through how to do that, and it works pretty well. I've had quite a number of people write me and say it changed their lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great, good. What is the benefits for the reader from reading your book?
Well, the first benefit is you understand what happened in your family and how that was good, because there's a lot of stuff that happens even in dysfunctional families that's
mm-hmm.
good
mm-hmm.
and useful and workable, and what happened that was a problem. How to resolve the problems so that you can get your own life in order, you can think more clearly and make better decisions and choose better people to be around and all that stuff. Plus, it gives you the understanding from a deep level of what's going on with other people.
Mm-hmm.
You can see when somebody is really, they may be 40 years old, but they're really a 3-year-old out of control.
Mm-hmm.
You can see how that works, and that gives you a lot of power in dealing with other people
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
in a much more functional way.
Mm-hmm. And does one have to blame their parents in order to grow out of dysfunction?
No, it's not a blame thing. Your parents didn't do it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Your parents were doing the best they knew how to do. Unfortunately, they may not have had the help they needed or the information they needed to really make things work, or they got overloaded or overwhelmed by something.
Mm-hmm.
It's not their fault.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
mm-hmm.
your fault. It's not anybody's fault. It's not about fault. It's about what works and what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
It helps to understand the dynamics of what went on so that you can see why certain things frighten you that don't frighten other people and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not about blaming anybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's about fixing things.
Good.
In fact, blame is a dysfunctional process, so we try to stay away from that.
Oh, I tend to have a view that we pick the families that we come into because there are lessons that we need to learn at the spiritual level, and that this family will give us the opportunity to learn those lessons. And so there's no blame involved. It's just they're the ones that are most useful for the experiences that you need at that particular time. So I kind of...
Exactly. Yeah. That's a very helpful viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have to argue religion or anything
mm-hmm.
else to
mm-hmm.
just say that if you have that viewpoint,
mm-hmm.
that you're here to learn and it's important stuff for you specifically to learn, and that's why it's here, so you can learn from it. That makes it so much easier to deal with and to take a step back and look at it a little more objectively.
Mm-hmm. I've learned...
So it's a great way to look at it.
I've learned through life that if you don't resolve an issue now, it's going to occur over and over and over until you do resolve it. And so sometimes it's better just not to have that problem
right.
or issue come back again and just work with it now and get over it, and then move on with life, right?
Right. My mentor used to say, it's like spaghetti. It's like life serves you a plate of spaghetti. If you don't eat it, then the next day you get warmed over spaghetti. And if you don't eat that, then you get twice warmed over spaghetti until you finally eat it and get it done with.
Right.
And then you're okay. Then you can move on to something else.
That's great. Yeah, I'll have to remember that. I like that. Then, Dr. Tessina, will you tell us, I know you've got lots of books. You'll tell us about your books and your services and how the listeners
right.
can reach you. And
thank you. I'd be happy to. I've written 13 books, which are published in 17 languages. They are all self-help books about couples like money, sex, and kids, or the commuter marriage, for women, the 10 smartest decisions a woman can make before 40 and after 40, and about recovery, like The Real 13th Step, or It Ends With You, which is How to Recover from Childhood Issues. So all those books are available at tinatessina.com. That's TINATESSINA.com. And there's also on that website a link to my blog, and every other thing I do is all on the front page. And there's a tab called Happiness Tips, which is those more than 100 articles I talked about.
Mm-hmm.
They're all free, and they're all very helpful 3 or 4 page articles about, say, the Warrior's Guidelines, or how to handle jealousy, or how to get cooperation, or why patterns are important. Many, many articles that are really helpful, and they all come from my therapy background,
mm-hmm.
from the work I do with clients, so it's real hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
This actually works for people because I've used it with people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all there at tinatessina.com.
Well, thank you. I appreciate this very much. It's interesting and will be helpful. Now, do you do work with people at a distance, or do they have to come to your office?
No, I do online therapy. I'm the chief romance officer
mm-hmm.
of a website called loveforever.com,
mm-hmm.
and they have a really wonderful Skype type,
mm-hmm.
but very confidential
mm-hmm.
therapy arrangement where you can see each other on the screen and talk
Good.
And do that. So
mm-hmm.
I do distance therapy that way.
Mm-hmm.
I've also done therapy on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely do it in person here in Long Beach, California.
Great. Good. That's helpful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. I really have appreciated this conversation.
Good. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. I invite you to my websites, www.holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all of the past shows from the last 5.5 years. Under the blog, with a search engine so you can look for a specific topic. You will also find a place to sign up for a free monthly newsletter on holistic health and the latest information on research on cancer, also under the blog. I also invite you to my website, beatlungcancer.net, where you will find information on my latest book, You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions. You will also find endorsements. You will find additional information about the book, and you will also find a site where you can purchase the book from me, or you can also purchase it at Amazon.com. I also invite you to join me on Facebook under Carl Helvey or under Holistic Health Show or under Beat Lung Cancer. I also invite you to join me on LinkedIn under Carl Helvey or on Twitter under Holist Health Show. I hope you've enjoyed the show today, and I look forward to seeing you again in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host, wishing you a great week.